Welcome to Katie's Crib, a production of iHeartRadio and Shondaland Audio. Hi, guys, it's Katie Lowes, and welcome back to Katie's Crib, the podcast for real conversations about all things parenting. Okay, on this episode, in honor of Father's Day, I am so incredibly happy to have my friend Bryce Dallas Howard joining us to talk about a lot of things, but in particular, to celebrate extraordinary dads. Now, you guys know Bryce as a massively talented actress. She starred in Rocket Man, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, Pete's Dragon, The Help, and that amazingly, incredibly terrifying Black Mirror episode that messed us all up a lot, just to name a few. She's also been super busy in the director's seat. She has a documentary called Dads. It offers a firsthand glimpse into what fatherhood looks like today all across the globe. And in addition to bringing me to tears like 1,000 times while I watched it, the film is just a very heartening picture that we don't get to see enough. Okay, so we're going to get into all that. But first, I want to take a moment to check in with all of you. How are you guys doing? Hi, mamas. How are you? Especially during this time. I want to hear from you and what questions you have about what's going on and ways that Katie's Crib can help. All of these huge, huge things that we are dealing with right now. I plan to have episodes coming up where we talk about coronavirus in pregnancy, coronavirus in toddlers. We're going to have a pediatrician come on and talk to us, as well as a OB who's specializing in coronavirus right now. I also would love to do a whole episode on how to raise an anti-racist kid. So, what do you guys think? I would love to hear your opinions. You can email me your questions at katiescrib@shondaland.com. Okay, without further ado, here's my dear friend Bryce Dallas Howard. Guys, Bryce Dallas Howard is here. For Bryce, I can't express... Oh, first of all, we have to say congratulations on graduating, right?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Guys, so Bryce Dallas Howard and I went to Tisch School of the Arts together at NYU. Some of the greatest memories I have of how I formed into being a person, artistically, personally, professionally, whatever, all of those things. Bryce and I got to do a show together in college, and you are just the most exceptional actress. Like, then, now, oh my God, I was a small part in the play. Bryce was the lead, obviously, duh. And I just remember, like,
not small.
Yeah, I just remember sitting back there and just being like, she is the most. I'm such a fan of your work. I'm so glad I got to work with you on stage in college. I'm just so glad to know you on so many levels. And every time I get to see you, which isn't enough, but when I do get to see you at Hollywood functions or whatever, you just really feel like a safe haven of home to me. I don't know if it's because we grew up together or like those were such formative years. Also, your then boyfriend, now husband, Seth Gable, was roommates with a guy I was dating in college. So
who just had a baby.
No yes. way.
Yes.
Oh my
yes.
God. Congratulations, girl. Jason Liu. Of course he had a girl. Yes. I'm naming. He's wonderful. Jason, he's a dear friend. I love him to death. I dated him in college. He was best friends with Seth. They lived together. So like Bryce and I were really finding ourselves on stage, in their apartment, in yes. Brooklyn, you
we
know,
the
all these things. Yes, we were the girlfriends. And you were just the first person I knew who like got married and had kids. Mm. Like you were.
It happened right away.
Like
it was. A surprise.
We were nowhere near that. We were nowhere near that. But like you fell in love with our college boyfriends in a way where you were going to be with him forever. That was not the story with me and Jason Liu, although I love you, Jason Liu. Congrats on your baby. Did you always know you wanted to be a mom?
Yes. Yes, definitely. Well, first of all, thank you, Katie. I feel the same as you about you. And you were just always a light and always someone that I felt like I could always just be myself with. And like, I'm a little like, I mean, I'm sure you'll understand this. Like it was like the early aughts and like the hipster movement was just like being born and like, you know, in like Brooklyn and stuff. And, and I'm like, was a dork. Now a dork will always be a dork. But it was like there were those like hipster vibes going on. And so there was a little bit of like everyone was like 80% ironic and very cool and maybe a tiny bit aloof. And I just always felt with you, I was like, oh, a kindred spirit, like someone who I admire and I love and I feel just safe with, just totally safe.
Because we were like, what are we doing in this Brooklyn apartment was so disgusting. There was like three boys living there that you had to walk through each of their bedrooms to get to a bathroom. Like, it was so gross, and it was not cool Greenpoint Williamsburg like what it is now. I mean, this was 20 years ago, and it was not right. The hipster thing was just starting. But you and Seth were the real deal. Like,
yeah, it worked out. And then luckily enough, Dane, who was the third, it was Dane, Jason, and Seth.
Right.
Dane is now my brother-in-law. They just had married my sister. They just had their third baby. They just had a girl.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So the only pair that didn't get in on getting to call Bryce a sister-in-law, well, that wouldn't have worked because you don't have... Oh, I guess if I had married you...
No,
they weren't related. But now Dane is your brother-in-law, which is crazy.
Yes, and so fun.
And all of the other memory I have is when we were doing the play... I remember, first of all, I didn't even know Ron Howard was your dad. Like, I had no idea. And then I remember we were doing the play, Four Saints in Mexico, which, again, to go along with this whole, like, hipster college, like, New York 20 years ago, you know, us coming off the train and, like, living in New York City, being, you know, we were these lost dorks.
It was like devised theater.
Yes. And we were like, we thought we were making the greatest art that has ever been created. I'm speaking for you, but I thought
I still feel to this day that that's the case.
Maybe it was. We were making very experimental theater, and it was like opening night, and you were running off somewhere, and you were like, oh, just let me know if my family gets here. And I was like, okay. We were sharing all the girls were in one dressing room. And I was like, how will I know it's your family? Because I didn't know it was your dad, it was Ron Howard. And you're like, it's a like pack of redheads. Because like your entire family, you have twin sisters who are redhead, your brother's redhead, your mom and dad are redhead. And then I was like, oh my God, I think her dad is Ron Howard. Like it dawned on me at that point. And then and then you got flowers delivered to the dressing room from your godfather, Henry Winkler. And I was like, this is the most famous person I have ever known in my entire life. And she's this beautiful. And she's this talented. This is so dumb. Anyway.
Oh, Katie.
Those are my Bryce Dallas Howard memories.
It's like, I mean, but honestly, I have to say, just like given the fact that we're talking about dads and stuff, I feel I've been so lucky in the dad department. Like, Seth is an incredible dad as my husband. But even back then, like we're like 18, 19, 20 years old, like my dad, my godfather, like now like Josh Gad is the godfather of my children. Like it's just like, you know, just men showing up for the women in their lives. And I've just always felt that that's what I should expect.
Absolutely. Did you know that Seth was going to be... Okay, Seth is a very involved father. You always knew you wanted to be a mom. It was a shock to you that you did get pregnant very early.
Yes.
And it wasn't an easy road for you, right, to get pregnant? Like you...
Well, I definitely wanted to be a parent, but Seth and I weren't married yet. Mm-hmm. And I was like young, and that was like, okay, we're going to do it in the future or whatever. And simultaneously, there were like some like, not to go too far, but I think like your audience can vibe with this. There were some gynecological like complications. And there was a moment when I thought like, oh my gosh, like this might not be possible. Uh-huh. And so I was really proactively working on kind of balancing everything but with no intention of getting pregnant at all. And Seth and I got married. I was doing Spider-Man 3 at the time and had been doing like all of these stunts and like dyeing, like bleaching my hair and just all this stuff. And then and we finished shooting 2 days before my wedding. And so I was just like, go, 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 go. And then I got married. And I remember the morning after I got married, I woke up and I was like, oh, I feel so nauseous. But I didn't kind of connect the dots. And I went on a trip with my family instead of like a honeymoon, proper honeymoon thing. But it was super fun. and we were all on a boat. And so I thought I was seasick the whole time. And,
nope.
And then finally, yep, nope, not at all. Finally got a test, found out I was pregnant. And then when I came home and went to the gynecologist, I was like 11 weeks pregnant. So
Whoa.
I had had no idea. And in retrospect, I'm sort of like, okay, that's great. Because like it would have maybe like getting married and then also being like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a mom. Like it was great to be like, okay, that chapter is done. We're married. The wedding is out of the way. And now the focus is starting a family together. And I was instantly ecstatic. Seth, when I was like, I'm pregnant, he literally, it was like in a movie. He was like standing in front of a chair and he did the like slow sit down. And then he like went and put his hands like up to his head. I was just like in this like position of like defeated.
Well, he was so. Where are you? 25?
He's like 24.
I mean, come on, a man at 24. That's a huge. Just got married. His wife's Spider-Man 3. Like he now he's pregnant. Like that just seems like. I mean,
it's a lot.
Yeah, that's
a lot.
A real...
And I was like, I'm gonna be such a natural mom. Like I'm the oldest of four. I'm the oldest of all my cousins. Like I worked at a daycare. Like for years and years and years. Was a nanny. All that kind of stuff. And then when I gave birth, for a myriad of reasons, I suffered really hardcore with postpartum depression.
Yeah, I remember
Seth,
this.
On the other hand, I have this distinct memory where I gave birth and, you know, you're like, it's like a fever dream, you know, and yeah. You're like, oh, the baby and all this kind of stuff. And then they're sort of like dealing with me in the placenta. I mean, I'm really going there right now.
Oh, no, we talk about
Katie.
A lot of vaginas. I mean, we've had sex therapists, pelvic floor specialists, vaginas,
beautiful.
So we're ripping. It doesn't matter. Like anything
beautiful.
Is, it's very
beautiful.
Raw.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous. So like in that like period of time.
After birth.
When you're like, yeah, after birth, when you're like the placenta is happening.
Yeah.
They gave Theo to Seth and Seth took off his shirt. So skin to skin. And I just saw him cradling Theo. And whispering in his ear, anything is possible. Just again and again, anything is possible. Anything is possible. And that wasn't something that we like strategized together. Like this was just Seth stepping into this new realm of his life. But what's really interesting.
I have such goosebumps.
Well, what's interesting is that what I realized in making dads is that there's no rite of passage for men when they become fathers. Zero. Like.
Interesting.
As far as my research, I mean, I couldn't find one, really. No, certainly not a mainstream rite of passage like, say, a baby shower is for women.
Right.
And so this lack of acknowledgement that your life is going to completely change, I think kind of leave men out to dry a little
for
bit.
Sure.
And
for sure.
The fact that Seth had those instincts was a gift. It's very normal, but it's not that we always need to expect that. And the same goes for women. And I didn't have the instincts that Seth was having in that
I
moment.
I didn't either.
And I was kind of in this existential crisis, right? Yeah.
Oh, my God. You had really bad. So how your postpartum depression, I've read in articles out there and stuff. It was really
long.
You had really long, dark. Mine was only like 6 weeks and it started to lift and shift. But I can remember that's when I realized I always knew. And I'm sure you did, too, because we've known Seth since he was like, this is who Seth and Adam are. But like, I always knew Adam was going to be a very, very hands on, very involved. If it's not 50-50, then God knows there's a lot of 70-30 and it's him, to be honest.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Like to be completely frank about that.
No surprise.
And I feel like same with Seth. And I feel like. When I came home and I didn't connect to Albie at all right away and I was dreaming of moving to Europe and changing my name and I wanted a fake identity and why did I do this? And similarly, you had said in an article you called Theo it because you didn't have
yes.
any connection. I had the same. And Adam was taking – the night nurse was over and Adam was like, holy fuck, I got to write down everything this person's saying because I think I'm going to be alone in this. Like I don't think Katie is available. Like
yeah.
I better figure out how to do this. Did you know when you had postpartum depression, did Seth really have to step up?
So here's what's super messed up. And this is why. And this is and I did it differently the second time for this reason. Seth had a job that he had to go to 5 days after Theo was born. And we also in this sort of like we were like in this sort of hippy dippy phase of our life, we were like, maybe we'll have a postpartum doula. We can really do it all on our own.
Sure.
And then the postpartum doula actually wasn't available because I went so over, and then she had another family she needed to go with. And
sure.
So it was just me and Theo, because Seth was gone. And it was like that for a while. And that was something that really, especially at night, we eventually, because I actually had to, 2 weeks after he was born, I needed to go do press for Spider-Man. And I was like, oh my gosh, like
how
I'm still wearing a diaper myself.
How did it, you, it, I can't.
It wasn't pretty at all. Like not a good move in general. But because we hadn't kind of like anticipated what this post like birth period of time was going to be like, Seth just wasn't, he literally wasn't physically there for quite a while. And then I went into doing a movie when Theo was just a few months old. And so he was with me, and there was a caregiver with me, which obviously like made a huge difference, but I was separate from Seth. And so it wasn't until Theo was like really like 6-7 months old that they were, that he was able to like fully engage, just because they were in the same place. And that just like having the parenting kind of everything on me when I was going through this like total just falling into a bottomless pit, it felt like, was really confusing. And then also doing press at the same time, I was trying to put words to the experience. I'm like, they're like, you must be so happy. I'm like, I'm so happy. And I'm like, I'm enthusiastic about everything. So it just felt so, the whole thing was just really, really, I mean, defining. It was a defining moment for me. And when I had Beatrice, Seth was working, and he was working in Vancouver. And so I decided to take Theo and go there and give birth in Vancouver, which was a really great experience. And actually, because I had a history of postpartum depression, even though I only went there when I was like, I was like 30 something weeks, it was like really kind of near the end. And so I had to meet a doctor, like, just like, you know,
last minute. Really, hey, you want to deliver this baby? Great.
Yeah, exactly. But they have systems there in Canada where they have mental health reproductive units in every hospital. And so they actually put me with both a psychiatrist and a psychologist prior to giving birth so that they would have a baseline.
This is amazing.
It's amazing. It changed my life. So I had a baseline. And then after I gave birth with Beatrice, they had an understanding of where I was at before.
Did you have any of that with Beatrice? Did you have postpartum depression with Beatrice?
I had so much. Okay, so here's what happened. So Seth was working.
Uh-huh.
And the day, she was born 2 weeks late as well. The day of my due date, I fell. And I fell in a restaurant. I was walking into a restaurant and there was like water, and I went, whoop, boom.
No. No.
Yeah.
No.
And I like, my pelvis came apart. And so I was in excruciating pain. They brought me to the hospital. They're like, we need to monitor you for 24 hours and see like if the baby's in distress. The baby was fine. My pelvis was wrecked. They couldn't give me painkillers because I'm still pregnant. I called a few doctors and got some second opinions. This part is going to blow your mind. They were like, okay, your pelvis is wildly compromised. So if you have a C-section, your abdominal wall is compromised. You might not be able to walk for up to 6 months, like in a way that you actually feel like cool and it's fine. So you're going for a vaginal birth. And I was like, okay. And Theo, I didn't have any, it was totally unmedicated. And like two contractions in, I was like, I've made a terrible mistake, but it was meant to be a home birth. And so it like, that just all, like it was unmedicated. With Beatrice, I was like, okay, I'm gonna get an epidural. But then as I was getting closer to it, I was like, oh, maybe I can just do it. When my pelvis went out, they were like, just so you know, the only way you will be able to push is if we give you an epidural. And I was like, oh, got it. Copy that. Totally. So I was just at home for 2 weeks, had a wheelchair, had a walker to go to the bathroom. Like, it was wild.
I'm so quiet right now because my jaw is on the ground. Like, I can't
fathom
any of this.
I know. And I was like, and my whole family was super freaked because they were like, all we wanted to do is for Bryce to not have depression again. And now there's this and like what, and her husband is working on a show and she's in Canada and like, you know, like family wasn't there at the time. So what's going to happen? So I had in advance scheduled a baby nurse. And right. she was like this like 27-year-old like baby nurse, like super like young and like.
Go get her.
Yeah. Go get her. Awesome. Right. Awesome. And she, I called her and I was like, here's what happened. This is going on. Like, I don't know when the baby's going to be born, but it's going to be kind of a different situation than we anticipated.
Sure.
And she was like, we're going to, don't worry, this is going to be totally okay. And I eventually, when I gave birth, I was 2 weeks late. I got like wheeled into the hospital. They gave me an epidural before inducing me. And these were all things that like in my hippy dippy life, I was like, no, you know, right. And I'm not saying that it's like making the option to not participate in that is at all a bad thing. I was just very binary in my thinking. I was like,
that was
oh,
your
no,
birth plan. Like you were like, right. Yeah. You were very much like, this is the birth plan that I have always set for myself. And like,
yes.
I also know
yeah,
your
happen.
Mom, was your mom's labors all unmedicated?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I think with my sisters, because twins. She had vaginal births with my sisters. And she, I think she might have gotten an epidural near the end. And she said that she pushed my first sister out. And then they said, okay, here comes the second. And she looked at them and she said, do I have to?
That's like, amazing. Oh, the only reason I ask is because I feel like a lot of times, I feel like your mom was featured in the dad's in the show you directed. And because I feel like I got this vibe from your mom, like she videotaped all your births and she was like super into it. Like I just got this vibe like maybe that's just what you grew up thinking, like, oh, I'm going to have an unmedicated birth. And it's like so natural and so like part of motherhood and all this kind of shit, where I grew up with a mom who was like, I didn't know what the fuck was happening. I was on so many drugs. I didn't even know which way was up. So I was like, oh, great. I'm going to get a lot of drugs, like as many drugs as possible, because I do not want to feel this. But that's like the story I had been told my whole life. You know what I mean?
My mom, I'm remembering now. Mm-hmm. So my mom, she did get an epidural with the twins. She didn't with my brother. She didn't with me until the very, like it was like 20 hours in or something crazy. She called it the breath of God. And I remember her saying with the first birth, she's like, Bryce, please stay open. Just stay open. And so, you know, I think I was just much more prepared the second time mm-hmm. for to be supported.
Yeah.
And even though all the crazy stuff that happened, I was still supported.
Yeah.
And so while I did definitely, and the baby nurse actually, she mentioned to me, like, she started to see some signs and stuff. And she was like, you know, I would love for you to you know, mention these things with the therapist you're working with. But I was, because I had Beatrice in Canada, I had access to those services for a year.
Oh, a year. I mean, come on.
And it
changed
my life.
Yeah, we talk a lot about on Katie's Group, we talk a lot about like, here in America, they give you, like, after you have your baby and you go to your 6-week checkup, which is the one thing that's covered by insurance, that's 15 minutes, you get a stupid fucking piece of paper that has 5 questions on it with different levels of smiley faces, right? There's the sad face, the face that has a smile that's a line, or the smile. And you go through all the 5 and you're just supposed to say, do you want to kill yourself? Do you want to, I mean, and this is how they assess whether or not you have postpartum depression. First of all, it's coming way too late. 6 weeks is too late. You've already lost your mind. And like, it's just not, it's just not good enough. Like, it's just not a good enough system at all. And I just encourage new moms. I'm like, I had a long conversation with Adam before I had Albie, where I was like, listen to me, if 2 weeks go by after I have this kid and you don't recognize me as the person you've been in love with for 13 years, you have to make a lot of fucking phone calls. And here are the phone calls I need you to make. Like, here's my therapist. Let's get a psychologist on speed dial. Let's just make sure that I have the group around in case I need them, you know, like, and I just think women are just super unprepared. And I think we do a terrible job in America taking care of our women postpartum. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely. what's interesting is actually one of the reasons why I wanted to make this movie actually had to do with paternity leave.
Yes, because, this is what I'm talking about. Get into this.
Yes, it was shocking. This statistic was shocking. I'm not going to give exact numbers because it's changing and it's a little bit different, but it's like, so forgive some generalizations. But what I learned is that for the majority of men all over the globe who receive paid paternity leave, they don't take it. So what's going on? What's going on if fathers who are receiving paid paternity leave are not taking advantage of it? And when we actually, like, when you look into it, and I worked with an organization called the Promundo Institute in Brazil, and they're right at the forefront of this, of trying to kind of solve what is going on and what changes can we make to support our fathers and to shift this. And basically what is happening globally is there is a stigma around fathers being caregivers, that if fathers are caregivers, then they are therefore not providers. And if they are not providers, then they're lazy. Then they're not showing up for their family.
They're not men.
Masculine. They're not men. Sure. And this idea, this notion of you get paid paternity leave, but your boss is like, come back when you're ready. It's like, no, come back in 6 weeks. There's a set period of time. It's not like that they get to pick or choose when they come back. Or even worse, it's like, oh yeah, they're taking their paternity leave, like lazy
bullshit
jerk.
Yeah.
Clearly, I don't know if this guy's really committed to his job, because he took his paternity leave. He leaves early from work sometimes to go to a game. Like, I don't know about this guy if we want to be, focusing on leveraging someone like this. And so that's just, it's ass backwards.
I remember it in the movie in Dads. It was like, it hit me. Like, I was like, oh yeah. Like, if the dad or the partner like can't take paternity leave, who's supposed to take care of the mom? Like, Adam was so key in my caretaking, because I couldn't walk, and because I was sitting on donuts, and because I was struggling with emotional breakdowns every hour, crying for no reason, and because breastfeeding was such a struggle and was so scary and all of these things. But like, Adam was serious about it. He took a 3-month paternity leave on his own, not paid. Like, he just told his agents and managers, I don't want a single audition. I'm not working. Call me after January. Like, I'm only going to get this a couple times in my life if I'm lucky. And there's no acting job or opportunity that's worth it to me. I just don't care. Listen, Adam Shapiro is, I married the guy. But anyway.
He's the best.
I love him so much. But why? I mean, I'm hoping this film and can change this. But like, how? I really feel like you're shifting the narrative. So you guys know, like, in this documentary that Bryce directed so beautifully, we're looking at dads in the caretaking role. Some of the dads featured in it are like 100% stay-at-home dads. Some of the dads are working and caretaking like a huge load with the mom. It's all over the world. There's dads in Japan. There's dad in Brazil. There's a dad in Maryland. There's a dad. I mean, it's showing stuff all over. But I do think there's such stigmas attached to like dads not being the providers. It's really sucks. Like, it's just the worst. Like, what was your reason for making the film? Was that part of it? Was it the paternity leave thing? Like, what inspired it?
It was that we become what we see. What we see modeled for us either in our own households or what we see modeled for us, out in our culture, on our TV, on our phones, etc. Mm-hmm. And for such a long time now, it's been so obvious to me that I'm just not seeing the dads that I know in my life depicted on television. Like, the dads on television are often like they're like sort of like loser dads. Like, that's what seems to be more entertaining or something.
Right.
Or they're like over the top superstar dads.
Right.
And that's a great thing to celebrate. But the reality is that most fathers, a vast majority of fathers, are engaged, are totally committed to being remarkable parents, are constantly trying and growing, and they are not being acknowledged. Like, they are left off. Like, for instance, I was making this movie, and there was, at my kid's school, there was a texting chain that was started for moms. And I asked, could Seth be on it? But it was for moms. And I was like, what are you telling my husband? First of all, I'm not going to be able to respond to things because I'm
working or whatever.
I'm literally directing Mandalorian right this second.
Right.
So my phone is off today.
Right.
You know, my phone is off today, tomorrow, and the next day. And so, therefore, the person who I trust, the person whose responsibility it is, the person who deserves to be included and acknowledged is not. And that's not like, I mean, that what the way that I just said that seems like super duper damning. And it's, I don't mean it to be, because it's like, you know, there's like this, having a supportive group of mothers is crucial, absolutely crucial.
Crucial.
But we leave no room for fathers. And living across the street from us for many, many years was a family where the mom worked and the dad was a stay-at-home dad. And they had a son and a daughter who were the same exact ages as our kids. And he homeschooled them. And so our kids would constantly come home from school and just run over there, and they would just be with Jay, and Jay would be like watching all four kids. I was like, how are you doing this, man? And Theo was seven at the time. And after about a month or two of this kind of consistent routine, he said to us, he said, I know what I want to be when I grow up. And we were like, what? And he said, a stay-at-home dad. And I realized that if he had never seen Jay be a stay-at-home dad, he never would have known that that was something that he could aspire to, that that was a part of his purpose on this planet. And yet with little girls, it's like they're literally 18 months old. And you're like, here's a baby. You have a little baby.
You have it's a like toy baby doll that you can burp and give ba-bas and like all this crap. Yeah, it's
like
so
they're like
ridiculous.
Grooming us. And again, it's not to vilify that. But why are we leaving our boys out? You know, why are we saying that they are not of value in this area? Because it's so wrongheaded, and it's not what boys want, and it's not what men want. And so we are living in a time when we are publicly able to, for the first time, safely say what we hope our boys and men will aspire to. We can safely say these things now because of the Me Too movement.
Right.
We can say what we don't want them to do, and we must say what we want them to do. We must leave that space. And so it's not fair for, you know, like it's essential that my son understands consent. It's essential that my son understands white privilege.
That's right.
It's essential that my son understands about what it is to be a human being in the world. But it's equally essential that my son understands that he has as much opportunities as my daughter does, especially when it comes to how he wants to create his family and the role that he wants to play in his family. And that is something that has just been just generation after generation undermined, just always, to the point where I realized when we were making the movie and I was pulling footage in from Andy Griffith's show, which was a show that I think was a really good example of what a father-son relationship can be like. And, you know, the kind of like, how to raise a young man in a way where you're involved, you're present, you know, there's integrity, all of that. His mom, Opie's mom, was dead.
Right.
Like, there couldn't even be a mother.
There couldn't even be a mother part of it. Right.
In order for that relationship to exist.
To be like that. The mom had to be out of the way. Oh, my God.
Like, completely out of the picture. Otherwise, it was maybe weird that the dad would be that engaged, involved, et cetera. So, like, what are we teaching our boys? And the truth is, like, so much better than what has been depicted on television. Like, you know, the truth is Adam, is Seth, is Josh, is
yeah, like, and also I feel like Seth, you know, your son has such a good shot because you do a beautiful job in Dad, like, showing how we have a lovely line in the film between your granddad and then your dad and then your brother, who also becomes a new father in the film, which is beautiful to see. And each of those four, no, well, you hear from three generations, soon to be four, but like you hear from the three men how each of those fathers modeled being so present. Like, yes, your dad was obviously on 8,000 sets and doing 8,000 hours when you guys were kids, but there were pictures of like him balancing like three of the four of you on his knee while he's calling action. Like, and I related to that. My dad was gone. My dad's a fashion photographer and he shot on location, you know, 200 days a year. And I feel like my dad was so fucking present. Like he mm-hmm. was at every play I was in high school. He was at every little recital. He was at every little, you know what I mean? Like he, and even when he was away, we talked on the phone. Like it wasn't like he was absent at all. So I just think Theo is really, if everything is true about modeling, he has to look to Seth. He gets to look to your dad. He gets to look to your granddad and his uncle Reed. Of what it really can look like. I mean, I would not survive with Adam Shapiro. There is no way on this. I'm serious. Like he's so, he gets really angry. Like when I went back to work, when Albie was little, our nanny, we hired a nanny to come and Adam all of a sudden started to feel pushed out. Like he was like, I feel like I need to be on the text chain with you and the nanny. Mm-hmm. Like he was like, I don't care if she's here. If I'm taking him. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like mm-hmm. trying to figure out that he still wants to be involved, like in everything. He's involved in everything, like no questions asked. What do you want people to take away from the film?
I think that for dads, especially, mm-hmm. I would want them to feel or to know that they're not alone, you know, to feel part of a community. And I think for me, when after having my first kid, and I felt so alone, you know, because like you said, like we were like,
you were the
like
only people that were having babies. The rest of us were still gallivanting around Brooklyn, like trying to like smoke cigarettes and be cool. And like, you know, we were just like still making like really avant-garde art in like church basements, like that were disgusting on like the Lower East Side. Like that's what we were doing. And you were busy like making a family, which was insane.
Oh my gosh.
But you were alone. Insane. You were alone. You were.
I felt alone. I felt alone. And I felt, especially with postpartum and all of that. And when I finally started to feel like, oh, I can put a name to some of this was when I read like Brooke Shields' book.
Yes.
And so I think for dads, you know, it's like they don't necessarily, or at least the dads that I interviewed communicated with me, they don't necessarily see these examples again and again and again in a way that it affirms their own role and the work that they're doing in their family. And so and there's not kind of a language to the experience of fathers caregiving so that they are given that space and those boundaries and the respect so that it's like, okay, it's not just assumed that the dads don't want to be on the mom's texting chain. Mm-hmm. Like they want to know everything that the mom would know. So it's yes. Okay. So yeah. So Brooke Shields' book is called
Down Came the Rain, My Journey Through Postpartum Depression. Okay. Amazing. We're going to link to that.
Now, I did a visual. If you remember, I said rain and I went down.
Yeah, she did. She did rain and she made like a raindrops with her fingers, like the Itsy Bitsy Spider like type of thing. Now, Bryce, what did you... How was it directing? How was it directing your dad? Was Seth watching the kids while you were directing? Like, tell me about that experience.
Yeah. So I love to have the kids on set as much as allows, because that's what my experience was like growing up. And I think that was really helpful. Really, really, really helpful. Mm-hmm. And for me to understand what my dad was doing all day, and also for me to be involved and for me to have a sense of the adult world and all of that. It was really fun. It was really fun to do this documentary. But that being said, what was interesting was that I was actually prepping, shooting, and then in post for Mandalorian during the week. And then on the weekends I was, doing all the interviews, and then ultimately, when I went into post for dads, it worked out with them.
And the interviews are hilarious. The interviews, you guys, are like, it's like Kimmel, Fallon, Conan. It's like the greatest, most hilarious.
Hasan Minhaj.
Like, it's, It's like the greatest. Oh, yeah. Will Smith. Oh, my God. They're just hilarious. The most brilliant, hilarious dads talking about. God, you know what? It's not coincidental. I felt like the majority of them, and this is why this movie is so important now that I'm thinking about it, the majority of them also had wonderful dads, I feel like. Right?
That's what was really, 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 I mean, it really stood out to me that there's like two sets of dads who are focused on in this movie. And we called them the hero dads and the comedian dads. Mm-hmm. And the comedian dads are specifically fathers who are currently or have a history of being stand-up comics. And because stand-up comics are really our modern day philosophers. Mm. And I wanted this kind of Greek chorus of dads who could speak
genius
to the universality of it. But I also wanted it to be, even though it's an emotional movie for a lot of folks, I started out wanting to make a comedy.
So, oh, you did. You did both. I was fucking I was dying. The dad in Maryland who is a full-on stay-at-home dad, belief. I mean.
Yeah. Or San Diego, actually. He's in San Diego.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
San Diego. Belief. Yeah. His kid, like, one kid's on the potty, and he runs downstairs after he brought in groceries, and then another kid, while the other kids, he's down there with the one kid potty training. The one kid's going through the groceries, takes out the carton of eggs, takes the whole carton of eggs to the kid's crib, cracks all the eggs all over the crib. I mean, I had tears streaming down my face. You can't, and he's like, you can't make this shit up. And then my wife comes home and asks me about my day. It's like, I can't tell you about my day. I don't know what the fuck was going on. Like, it's hilarious and heartfelt and tears.
But
yeah,
was so real. And all the dads that we profiled were so real. And then all the dads who are comedian dads were also so incredibly genuine. And what I learned was while the comedian dads that I was interviewing, when they would talk about their own fathers, you know, fathers largely of another generation. Yeah. And their dads were trying, you know, like their dads were like cared about their family. And even the fathers who they felt estranged
or they were really strict,
you know, even if there were, you know, things that were problematic, there was always a huge amount of compassion because I think they saw that their fathers were dedicated. And it again speaks to that the vast majority of fathers are showing up and have been for generations, but we still haven't made that space necessarily for them. I mean, best depicted with Shuichi, who's in Japan, when he could no longer provide for his wife, he thought of committing suicide. When she was like, she referred to it as a house husband. Just be a house husband.
Right.
And he thought, like, you know, that I'm no longer of value because of that. And then he turned out to be the most amazing house husband. And
oh, he's incredible. He ends up being diagnosed with an autoimmune disease that, so he can no longer work. And yeah, he contemplates suicide. He's like, if I can't work, then I am no longer of value. And then he finds this amazing value in just raising a human being, which, come on, like, that is such beautiful stories. I was like completely blown away. And you're right. I've never seen anything like it. Like, I mean, we do a lot of work here on Katie's Crib, really debunking the myths surrounding motherhood and making sure people know what it really looks like. And guess what? You're not going to get your body back in 15 days or whatever the fuck Hollywood says. You know what I mean? Like, and you might not like
that
your baby at first. Oh, it's so dumb. It's so dumb. I don't even have time. I'm like, that is so stupid. What are we doing? It's so dumb. But I really, oh, I remember that. Sorry, I just got another image. When you were doing press for Spider-Man and you were dealing with postpartum and also the weight gain from Theo, that was not fun for you.
That was
and why
awful.
Would it be?
It was awful. Awful. And I remember, I mean, this is the thing that's so beautiful. I was like, I was over 200 pounds when I had Theo. And I remember when I was, by the way, I don't care about weight at all anymore. And
no.
Haven't for quite a while. And my life is so much better for it. When I went to have Beatrice, I was like, I found out I was pregnant and I like went on this like hiking retreat. And I was like, I hiked like 40 miles in a week. And I was like, I'm going to be so fit. I'm going to be such a fit mom. I'm going to be like so fit. Months after Beatrice was born, I was 243 pounds.
There you have it, folks.
You can't control your body. Your body's going to do what your body's going to do.
No, and also, like, so was Beyonce. Like, guys, watching her documentary, like, Beyonce was like, I was over 200 whatever pounds pregnant. Like, it's just, it's got to stop.
And P.S., I was super cute. Like,
you were so cute. And also, you were making
a
human.
I can really handle this.
But I was thinking in the film, like in the documentary, I haven't seen, like, I feel kind of bad right now because I feel like we do a lot of work on Katie's Crib on Moms. And like, look, that shit all needs to happen. 100%. I'm all about it. But like, I have really taken for granted, I think, that Adam's just like the best. And like, sometimes I'm in like a yoga class and everyone's like, thank your partners. Like, have you thanked your partner? And I'm like, shit, I got to thank my partner. Like, dang, like I have not really been doing that. And look at you. You made a whole film. Like, Seth, you're good for a while. Like, Seth and your dad and your granddad and your brother, like, you don't have to buy them a gift for like a very long time. You are just singing fatherhood praises and really taking a look at why culturally it's not okay to like be a house husband or a stay-at-home dad or fuck that, even a dad that works but is super involved and showing up and trying and failing but trying again and keeping on trying. Like, I don't know why we haven't seen that. Why?
It was so surprising, honestly, Katie. It was so surprising to me, like, when it all started. And the way that I got this was that a company, Unilever,
yes,
who owns Dove and Dove Men Care,
yes,
wanted to make a feature film documentary about modern fathering. And that was it. That was like the only requirement. And they were the ones who were working with the Promundo Institute and had all the information about paternity leave and all of that. And so it wasn't something that came to me on my own. But the moment I was involved in it, I was like, why does this feel fresh? This should not feel fresh. This is very basic stuff.
Like,
wow. Why? And I mean, I was kind of overcoming my own sort of like tunnel vision about mothering, because I said in the room, I was like, I mean, yeah, paternity leave, but like, shouldn't I be like fighting for maternity leave? And then the more that I learned about it, it was like, oh my gosh, if we're fighting for maternity leave, but we're not fighting for paternity leave, it is yet again putting all of the responsibility on the women.
That's
and
right.
Undermining the fathers and preventing them from being able to form a bond, competency, involvement, all of that.
And right learn away. How to do it. I mean, Adam's biggest advice for new dads, whenever he talks to a friend who's about to have a baby and they ask, like, what do they think? He's like, listen to me, get super involved from the start, because if you're not learning diapers and all this stuff, it just means you're never going to do it. And then there's just more stuff that's going to come along that you're never going to do. And she's going to do it all. And you're just going to be less and less and less and less involved. And so he's just like, do it all and don't be afraid. You're going to fuck it up a lot. Like, it's fine. Like, you're going to get to try again, because they shit like 6 times a day in their diaper, or like they take a bath like every night. So if you sucked one night, you can try it again, you know, or it's just like
Seth changed every diaper unless he wasn't there. Every diaper, because I was nursing. So
you were in charge of input. He was in charge of output.
100%.
I want to just make sure that we know that Dads is coming out June 19th on Apple TV. I loved it. I watched it alone. I'm going to watch it again with Adam when it comes out. He's going to love it. It's so important. Like, and you just did such a great job.
Thank you, Kate.
Like, you really, I mean, just blew my mind. I laughed. I cried. I felt like what I was watching was important and fresh, as you said. Is there anything else you want to add about Dads or what you learned or what you hope audiences take away?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know what? What I'll just share, and this is such a weird thing to just sort of like volunteer, but it was really interesting because like I mentioned, when I was shooting Dads, it was mostly on the weekends because I was doing Mandalorian during the week. And so much of the heart of that show is the relationship between Mando and Baby Yoda. And it's a journey of really someone who like literally has a shell around them, is like fully disconnected from everyone around them, learns how to connect with this little vulnerable being and becomes their caregiver. And it was this really, I mean, Jon Favreau himself is just, he's a puddle of dad love. Like, he's just like the sweetest dad.
Oh,
like
bet.
The reason he created the show in part was so he wanted to make something so that he could stay at home with his kids. He's got three kids because his wife is a doctor at Cedars-Sinai. Mm. And he's like, if I leave, then like, you know, she can't leave her practice and then I'm not seeing my kids. And he just refused to do that like ever. And so that's why he created this production and the conceit of it and all of that sort of stuff that allowed facilitated
so cool.
shooting in Los Angeles. But at that, you know, he's the writer of the show. It was just so apparent, just scene after scene. It was like, oh my gosh, this is kind of a love story to new fathers in a way, you know, fathers like learning, like having their hearts opened and accepting this into their life, you know, and then discovering what the adventure is from there. And I think some of the best scenes of that show are the shows that exist between Baby and Mando. And it's like basically out of like Kramer versus Kramer. And it's a dad figuring it out. So, you know, I don't, in retrospect, I don't think it was an accident.
That you were doing both at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it was like, oh, okay, this is the theme of this year.
Yeah.
And in terms of Father's Day, I did totally. Beatrice asked me on Mother's Day this year. She was like, what are we going to get Daddy for Father's Day? What are you going to get Daddy? And I was like, it's okay. I made Daddy a documentary this year.
Yeah. You good. Like, you're so good.
He wasn't featured that much. So I do. There's going to be cards.
Yes. Okay. And one last question. What is any advice for moms with new babies going through it?
Gosh, I would say that is a given, and to take that on as a given, and that it's out of your control for a while. And it's out of your control because your hormones take a while to get back online. It's out of your control because it takes a while to practice competency with raising children. And that it's probably the best thing that you could ever do for your child, for yourself, and for your partner is to involve your partner in absolutely everything, and to expect it and then to allow it. Because what happens a lot is it's like, oh, that's the diaper doesn't get changed that way. Oh, no, I don't like it when. Oh, but you're doing.
You're going to hurt her. You're going to.
Yeah,
I know. It's bad.
Yes. And it's dads bad. Do it differently than moms. And so to allow that journey.
Let it go.
Process. Yes. Let it go. Which you know better than anyone. Right, Katie?
The minute I stopped trying to control that I did it better, like Adam just does it differently. And what that is a break for me. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're talking about potty training right now. Like, he really likes to poop with me because he feels safe. But you know what? Right now in quarantine, I get afternoons off and I do morning sessions. So in the afternoon is when he poops, and I have to let go that that's going to be Adam's situation. And like, I can't control that. And like, I want to be there so bad, but I also have my work to do. And so it's going to, I have to just let the poop lie where the poop's going to lie. You know what I mean? And I feel so lucky that I learned to just let it go, let him be super involved, even if he's going to do it differently, even if it's going to go bad or wrong, which really isn't true. It's just different. And then it just gives me a break. So I love that advice. I think it's spot on. Thank you so much, Bryce.
It's great. Thank you, Katie.
These memories, the memory lane. Thank you for coming on Katie's Crib. I couldn't be happy for you guys. Happy Father's Day. Watch Dads. on Apple TV. It's brilliant and a wonderful thing to watch with your families, with your partners, with the dads in your life, the father figures in your life, to celebrate them. And Bryce, you did a beautiful job. Thank you so much for coming on Katie's Crib.
Thank you, Katie. I've wanted to do this forever. I'm so excited.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the episode. A huge, massive shout out to all the dads out there. Happy, happy, happy Father's Day. Sending you all my love. And if you love the episode and want to hear more, please subscribe, tell your friends, share, rate, do all the things so we can keep making Katie's Crib. Thanks, guys. Happy Father's Day. Katie's Crib is a production of iHeartRadio and Shondaland Audio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.